Chodesh Tov. The Gemara in Megillah says Sholim v'dorshim b'hilchos achag shloshim yom lefnei achag. That 30 days before every Yom Tov, you have to start learning the dinim of that Yom Tov. So right now, we should all be starting to learn Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah isn't exactly a month, it's Rosh Chodesh Tov. But we also have another quote-unquote chag coming up, and that's, of course, Shemitah, which starts on Rosh Hashanah. And you might have an excuse, because you're brand new here. It's an Olah Chadash. Anyone else? No. You know what? Give me your, just those of you that are not regulars in the shir, jot down your email for reasons that the people that are regulars in the shir will understand.
That source in Megillah refers to all cooking?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it means...
people always quote it before Pesach. They quote it
before certainly before Pesach. Certainly before Pesach.
But,
yeah, it's a Takanas Moshe that you should learn. To learn Hilchos Purim is less work than learning Hilchos Pesach. And Hilchos Chanukah doesn't take all that long. But, you know, whatever you have to learn, you have to start... that's what being Jewish is. But for those of us who have been here now for multiple Shemitot, you've been here for more than one.
The fourth
Shemitah. Yeah. So this is already my... Fourth Shemitah.
Fourth.
Yeah.
You were in yeshiva when
I was in yeshiva as a student for a Shemitah, but when you're a yeshiva student, it's irrelevant. You don't even know what the date is, let alone the year, and you just eat whatever they give you, and you don't do much farming, so it's not so relevant. But since I came
in, you do eat.
You eat whatever they put in front of you, and you figure it's a yeshiva, so it's got to be kosher. Rabbi Bravender once said, you know, the definition of yeshiva is lunch. You get up, you sit, you learn, they give you lunch. You go, you sit, you learn, there's another meal. Right? Everything's taken, all of your needs are taken care of. So I thought that it would be worthwhile. A few people asked me, like, how many shiurim we're going to have. So we don't have that much time before Rosh Hashanah. And I want to focus essentially just on the halacha l'maisa. For the home consumer and gardener. Some people have ginot, other people don't have ginot. Everybody seems to eat food, so that's certainly relevant. Okay, welcome to everyone. Pull chairs around. I don't know if there's enough Xeroxes we can share. We can pull another table over if there's a need. But everybody certainly seems to eat. But nevertheless, I thought tonight. So we'll have a shiur for a couple of weeks. Maybe it'll run after Rosh Hashanah also, if relevant. But you know, certainly a good few weeks. We'll try to learn the practical dinim. We'll do it a little out of order tonight. We'll have just a little bit of an introduction and some of the let's say the machshava behind Shemitah. And then get into the practical halacha l'maisa for today of the halachot that already come into effect today, 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. And then next week we'll turn to kitchen matters, and then we'll go back to things related to gardening, if that's okay with everyone. Just a few by way of introduction. Someone said to me, oh, I saw you're giving the shiurim on Shemitah, but we hold from the Heter Mechira, and I'm not here to object to the Heter Mechira, although personally I do not really hold from the Heter. I personally do not rely on the Heter Mechira with an asterisk there, and we'll come back to what that asterisk means when we get up to that topic. But it's certainly a valid halachic entity, the Heter Mechira. So a guy says to me, we hold from the Heter Mechira, and we have the plastic grass. So really, there's no Shemitah for us. So this is absolutely false. Even if one holds from the Heter Mechira, you still go to the supermarket. And what are you going to find in the supermarket? You're going to find things that have Kedushat Shvit. Lots of things that have Kedushat Shvi'it, that have the sanctity, food that's grown in the sanctity of the Shemitah. Food that wasn't grown with the Heter Mechira, but was grown with permission through the Otzar Betin system or through some other arrangement, and the foods have sanctity, and they have to be treated in a certain way. According to the Ramban, There's a mitzvah to eat such food. Like there's a mitzvah to eat, I don't know, there's a mitzvah to eat
matzah,
although presumably nowadays all of the Shemitah is dirabanan, so even the Ramban would hold it's a mitzvah dirabanan to moro bismanazin. Like a mitzvah to eat moro bismanazin.
No, we'll change them.
And presumably, hopefully, and it's encouraging in these dark days to think that it would be so. Maybe even in the next Shemitah, we will have turned the demographic tide, and the majority of the Jewish people will be living within the borders of Medinat Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and then, presumably, at least according to most poskim, many poskim, Shemitah will once again be Deraisa, and that will cause all types of other. I don't want to say problems, but other opportunities for how we're going to manage, how we'll manage Shemitah once it is once again Min HaTorah. Just pass this right. If you're not one of the regulars in the shir, jot down your name and email in case I need to send something out in between or there's a change. There's a pen here. So it's absolutely not true that one who holds it from the Het Machira, that it means you've like done an end run around Shemitah. Absolutely not. You need to know how to still manage your kitchen. You need to know how to deal with the foods of the Kedusha Tshviyad. You need to know how to purchase the foods and the items that have Kedusha Tshviyad, that have sanctity, because the whole thing becomes really rather complicated. Even to those who hold from the Heter. The Heter Mechira. So it is really worthwhile. It is, however, amazing that, again, this is my fourth Shemitah here. Every year there's a whole new slew of books that come out. I just grabbed off the shelf a sampling, and this is not even all of them I have on the shelf, of books on Shemitah from the essential texts. I mean, the essential text would be the Mishnah and Masechet Shvit, which I just saw today, that Koren, you know, who puts out the new Gemaras, put out Mishnayot Shvi'it with Rav Steinsaltz's commentaries and pictures and all that kind of, like they're doing with the Gemara, they did with the Mishnah for Shvi'it. Rav Kook's texts, Shabbat Ha'aretz, Rav Kook, in the beginning of the 20th century, wrote a book on the Shemitah called Shabbat Ha'aretz. Of course, you know that Rav Kook was involved in the whole brouhaha about the Heter Mechira as a historical chapter. That's a very interesting thing. Rav Kook's texts every year. These are from the last Shemitah. Rav Rimon's book, which if you're gonna buy like one book, and it's worthwhile that every home should have like one book with a kind of summary of the laws of Shemitah, just like every home should have like Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata or the like for Hilchot Shabbat. So I would say that Rav Rimon's book is really quite good. Besides being a beautiful book, it's a worthwhile. Rav Rimon from the Olam Shvut here. This is the last Shemitah. There's a new edition which looks different and might have some other materials in it, but I wasn't going to buy a new copy each and every Shemitah. And this book, I think, is also available in English. Rav Rimon's book, is that correct?
Yeah.
Rav Rimon's book is also available in English from Magid, from Koren. I presume you can get it here at Mincer. This book from the Machon Limudei Mitzvah Atluyot Ba'aretz, which was Rav Afrati's organization, Yerushalayim, the organization that's kind of like, you know, the center for all the things connected to Terumot and Maaser and Shemitah. So this book, it's a series called Mishpatei Eretz, and the volume on Shemitah is a very handy book with a very handy index. If you need to look something up quickly, it's a very practical book. It's, of course, in Hebrew. And then, you know, I don't even know where these came from. Oh, this must be an English summary of this book, I think. You know, all these guys, they come out all the time. Some are better, some are worse. You won't be surprised to see that no two of them have unanimous opinions on many given matters, if not every given matter. But it's worthwhile getting something. This is Agnon. This has nothing to do with Shemitah. Rav Lichtenstein has an essay called Thoughts About Shemitah. It's in his volume Leaves of Faith, Volume 2. It was written probably his first Shemitah when he was here in the early 70s. And he describes Shemitah, as the contemporary Shemitah, as a halachic tragedy. A halachic tragedy. Why? So he says the following. If you look, just look in, look in, this week's parsha, yesterday's parsha. Not yesterday. What's today? Today's Tuesday. Last Shabbos. Parsha Re'eh. Zed Vara Shmita Shamut. Now there the Torah is talking about Shmitat Ksafim, which Akiva spoke about on Shabbat in Shul. Shmitat Ksafim, we paskin that Shmitat Ksafim, giving up, renouncing all your loans, any money that's owed to you, that applies at the end of the Shemitah. That will be next Rosh Hashanah. Everyone will make a prusbul, that document which allows you to keep the debts, because you really are technically passing over the debt to Bet Din, and Bet Din is collecting the debt on your behalf. That's a year from now. Although there is a shita that it's now, it's this Rosh Hashanah that Shemitah Ksafim applies. That's not the halacha l'maaseh. But just read those psukim. You don't have to read them. We just read them. You all remember them bal peh. What's the Torah describing about Shemitah? What's the Torah describing about Shemitah in Bahar? What's the aspiration of Shemitah?
Not to do any work.
Not to do any work, although that's not the aspiration of Shemitah Ksafim.
It's an equalizing source. It's a mini equalizer, not the same level as your bill, but it's a kind of corrects certain social inequalities to some extent.
Economic inequalities.
Economic,
right.
Social.
Right. Should we pull over another table, maybe? Why don't you folks move back? We'll pull over another table. Psychological. So maybe make a chet or something. I don't know.
Make a ribua. One there.
Okay. Yes. We, in the history of the shul, there's never been this many people. In the history of Efrat. So social equalizing, not to work, not to work the land, that you shouldn't work. There's a kind of utopian value at work. So Rav Aaron identifies three themes in the Shemitah. He says one is the idea of Shabbat Haaretz, that you don't work the land, and yet what happens? Somehow we don't starve to death. And this is before the whole idea of a heter mechira, and this is before the idea of, you know, now you go, you go into the supermarket, and half the stuff anyway comes from China, or comes from wherever, and altogether we eat, I don't know, 90% of our food is all types of processed foods, and things like that. Many of us have been reading over the past few years these books by Michael Pollan, right? You read it, you borrowed the book, you have my book now. And Cortec, I read these books. You know, this author journalist Michael Pollan. He wrote this book a few years ago called "The Omnivore's Dilemma." It's worth reading. About he plays out the kind of tensions in contemporary eating, in contemporary food, in contemporary society. How, for example, how eating organic might be much more healthy for you, but it might be much less healthy for the planet. Because in order for you to eat only organic, the amount of diesel fuel that has to be burned to get you your organic products flown in from around the world into your local market, right, is not the same as being a locavore, eating only locally grown things. Because nobody eats locally grown things, because we'd all starve to death. Because what do we have? What locally grown things do we have? We have a winery. All right, so that'll last you a couple days.
Food in season, you know,
right?
In season,
but the whole food industry is no longer is no longer up to speed, that we could, if tomorrow we were to all decide we're all going to be locavores, we'd be dead in a week. Because our locality doesn't produce the amount of food to keep a society fed. And that's the nature of globalization. So Pollan is very good in his books at teasing out these kinds of tensions in values that pesticides. Right? Pesticides are a terrible thing. But without them, there's no way we could produce the amount of food that we need on this planet to keep the amount of people that live here alive. All of Africa would starve to death. Right? It's just not feasible. So we're kind of like caught in this the condition of modernity. So the Torah certainly didn't, foresee these kinds of condition of modernity that I just described. So the idea of Shabbat Haaretz, and yet somehow still we all stay alive, reinforces faith in Kadosh Baruch Hu, reinforces faith in Hashgacha Pratis, reinforces faith in the idea that God is controlling the world, and it gives us a sense of that awareness. It negates that idea of kochi v'otzem yodi, that I do everything, right? I'm in charge. I control my... No, really, we're all kechomer b'yad hayotzer, right? And we're all really dependent on him. And those are some of the themes of what it means to literally put ourselves in God's hands for you. Another theme is the idea of liberating the farmer. Now, to liberate the farmer meant to liberate society. Because in the ancient world, not the ancient world, up until the Industrial Revolution, everybody was a farmer. That's not true. But the overwhelming majority of humanity had to be occupied in farming in order to produce the food that kept humanity alive. And it's true, there were other people, but a lot of those other people were involved in side industries that also served farming. But the amount of people today who work in agriculture is minuscule. I think worldwide it's something like 1.5% or something like that. And in Israel, the amount of Jews that are occupied in agriculture is even smaller still, with all due respect to the accomplishments of the Aliyah Rishona, the Aliyah Shnia, and the kibbutzim, and all those things. It's just not right. We're the startup nation anymore. People aren't going out and working in farms, and frankly none of us would have the slightest idea how to do it if the world were suddenly to revert back to the way it was. But in a time when the overwhelming majority of humanity was yoked to the farm for food production, it was a liberating experience from what was literally backbreaking work. Rav Aaron's description here is that it clips man's wings yet enables him to fly. That once every 7 years to pick your head up out of the trench and to have a moment of transcendence, to have a moment of some air to breathe, was something that kept humanity unbroken. And a third theme that he identifies is, Ben, like you said, the democratic strain. Right? This idea that on Shemitah, there's no rich, there's no poor, everyone has an equal hand, where food was money, where grain was the economy, right? So even though we had money, we had representational money, we had coins, we had other things, but the idea that food was money, right? Right, everyone has equal access. But then he says, what remains to us today of this enchanting vision? Nothing but a hollow shell. The transition from an agricultural economy to an industrial one has taken most of the prohibitions of work off the agenda for nearly everyone. For most people, the situation is relatively convenient and also straightforward. They need not circumvent or distort the prohibitions. They're simply lucky enough not to confront them. I mean, it's true that we have to figure out which hashgacha do we rely on, and do we eat from the Heter Mechira or don't we eat from the Heter Mechira. And if you have a backyard, I mean, even if you have a backyard where you might grow something, I've spoken many times in different occasions here on how special it is to me that, you know, we have a garden, which was something that never interested me. Growing up in New Jersey, you know, the last thing that interested me was having to go out and mow that lawn, which I had to do from time to time. When we came on, when we moved to the Zayat, so we moved in, and you remember Yossi Levy? They since moved away. He was the gabbai in the old in the caravan. So he was Abba Richman's son-in-law. So what? He moved to kibbutz the way people move to kibbutz. He didn't go to become a farmer. He's in high tech, and they were renting houses on kibbutz Sad, I think. So because he got a high tech job down in Ashkelon or something. So he had grass and I had grass. So I had a lawnmower and I'm mowing the lawn. So he says to me, like, how do you, like, you know, he grew up like in some city or something. You know, he grew up like in an apartment building. So he says, how do you know how to do that? So I said, well, I grew up in New Jersey. So he said, what? Kol echad mekabel in bar mitzvah? Like, you get a lawnmower? You know. So like the last, but once we moved here, once we became homeowners and you had a little garden, it was like very special to me, the idea that we're, you know, working the land. I mean, not kibbutz, but, you know, we have our own little land. We have our flowers. We have our grass. You have your olive tree. You have your rimon tree. We have those berries that I've spoken about here in shul on different occasions. I think there's something special about that. I think that it gave me a connection. It was completely unexpected to me. I never expected that this would be something that I would enjoy. I figured we'll get a gardener, or my wife will do it. But I was surprised to discover that it was something that had meaning for me, this connection to the earth. If you have an opportunity, it's worth reading every 7 years, every Shemitah. It's worth reading Walden. It's worth reading Thoreau's book, Walden. Right, there are certain books that are worth going back and reading every few years, right? And that expression of what that connection to the land is and what that means for society and etc. It's something that's worth doing, dusting off those old college textbooks. But we're not farmers, right? So what do I care whether we're going to get a couple of rimonim or a couple of berries or whatnot? You know, what do I care really if the grass is going to get a little brown next year, right? And the year after we'll have to work l'shakemoto, right? It doesn't affect my parnasa. I'm not the farmer of old where, you know, like, you understand why the Torah's description of Yirat Shamayim, why the Torah's description of Hashkacha Pratit, review Vahaya Im Shemo Tishmon, right? Why it's all dependent on rain. Because rain was the barometer of whether or not matzachen b'nei Hashem, whether or not God was pleased with us, right? Because it was the barometer. It would be the equivalent today of you know, going to Bank HaPoalim online and seeing, you know, how much in overdraft you are, right? Or how much above the line. Are you in the black? Are you in the red? Right? It's a barometer of how you're doing, right? V'olam hazeh uv'olam haba. Because it was an indicator of how God thought we were doing. So today, Rav Aaron says, this is a tragedy. Because even though we have Shemitah, but it doesn't affect us in that same way. Today, the situation is relatively convenient, right? Basically, we just don't even confront Shemitah, at least not in the... not in the direct, but like in the... not in the halachic sense, but in the... what it's meant to be accomplishing. However, as regard the prohibitions pertaining to consumption and the obligation to treat the produce of the Shemitah year as Kedusha, the situation is considerably more serious. What options are available to people who are anxious to observe the Kedusha of Shemitah with careful attention to all the details? They can rely on the legal fiction that, and woe to the ears that hear this, he writes, that the fields of Eretz Israel, from Lebanon to Egypt, from the Mediterranean to the Jordan, have been sold or leased to non-Jews. I have no intention of questioning the halachic validity of this sale, or the ability of a non-Jew's purchase to release the land from its kedusha. Right, the technical question of, does selling the land to a non-Jew, is it mafkia? Right, is this plot of land, do the laws of Shemitah now not apply there? Right, says I'm not niggling on the halachic issue. Nagid that it does work, or the ability of the non-Jew. Let us assume that those who permitted this were correct in doing so. It's the phenomena itself that we should examine. Right? And then he goes on to describe that even those that don't want to rely on the Heter Mechira, so what do you do? So here in Efrat, there'll be a store. Where is the store going to be? Has it been there? Which Makol? Are Makol here?
Nothing, not yet.
Right? So that, but in Efrat, last time there was 1.5 stores that were Otzar Bezdin, and you have the coupons, and you buy the, you know, it's all worked out. And maybe the variety and maybe even the quality is not the same as you're used to all the time, but that's not so bad. I was in America last week. My mother sent me to the supermarket, like a regular supermarket, not like one of these food galaxies or food universes. It's just like a regular ShopRite, right? It's like, you know, and she sent me to get a thing of pickles, a can of tomato sauce, and a bag of potato chips. Very well-balanced diet in the Sachs household. And I go, and there's like a whole aisle, like from sea to shining sea, of tomato sauces. 40 different brands, and each brand has 15 different varieties. And it's all the same, right? It's all the same. All the jars look exactly the same. Right? And 100 varieties of pickles, and just the sheffa is overwhelming. I mean, it makes Rami Levi look like a little bodega. Right? It's just, and that's just like a regular supermarket. It's just, I mean, it's not so bad to have from time to time a little cutback on whatever your regular level of sheffa is. So, to a certain degree, even people that are really invested in doing Shemitah Kemo Shetzarich, we're not doing it Kemo Shehaya, because that's not the nature of modernity. A number of people point out the parallels here in the Pesukim at the top, the Pesukim from Sefer Bereishit, from the first Perek of Bereishit, and the Pesukim in Parshat Bahar. These are just some of them. In the story of Maaseh Bereishit, it says, "Vayomer Elokim, hinei natati lachem et kol esev zorea zera asher al pnei kol haaretz." In Shemitah, we talk about Shabbat haaretz. People should share this. Only I didn't make enough. "Vet kol haetz asher bo pri etz zorea zera lachem yel ochla." And on Shemitah, what's the food? Lachem lochla. All of the food is there for you to eat. All of the food is hefker. You have berries growing in your backyard. I have berries growing in my backyard. We had such a crop this year. Where's that picture? I put that picture on the Facebook. You saw that? We had. You know. You go to the store and you buy. You buy like a little half a pint of blueberries, of blackberries. You know what it costs? It's like 35 shekel. So we had like on one Friday we picked. We had like 200 shekel worth. We had like a 200 shekel worth crop of blackberries. Like I said, we're gonna be rich, right? But then the next day the bush was, that was it. The bush was consumed.
By you or by the birds?
No, by my daughter. So, right, so you have cherries. So we're all going to have to come. We're not going to have to, but we're going to be able to come and take it. You have to be mafkirit. You have to make it available to everyone. It's a machlok. So you have to mafkirit, or it's mufkar me'alav. It's already hefker. You just have to not stand there with your shotgun at the front gate, you know, blocking people's way. You have to let them in. And this we talked about. We learned this. When did we learn this?
7 years ago?
No, recently in the Gemara.
Yes, we've been learning it in...
In Pesachim, right, in Makom Shinagu. No, but it also came up once last year, the year before. I don't remember. But that's the... When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Adam V'Chava that you see all this fruit? Lachem la'ochla. Right? Shemitah is lachem la'ochla. Right? right? Not just for you, Adam and Chava, but for all of the animals, right? Now, the world produces food. And in Gan Eden, according to the Midrash, all of the needs. Remember the Midrash. What's the punishment to Adam after the sin? Right? You have to sweat a little. You want to eat a loaf of bread? What are you going to have to do? Grinding wheat is the least of it. First, you have to plow the field, then you have to plant the seeds, then you have to sit around waiting, and then when it grows up, you have to harvest it, and you have to thresh it, you have to grind it, you have to knead it, you have to bake it. It's like a whole big schlep. It's not. You don't go to the store and buy bread. You want bread, you have to make it. It's like the old days. You want a chicken, you take a chicken from the coop, you walk to the shochet lops the head off. Then you have to pluck out the feathers, you have to salt the meat. It's like a big deal. It's not like you come home from work and you say, hey, what do we have for dinner? Well, let's find something. Right? You had to like start working. You had to start making dinner yesterday. Right? Which is a problem because yesterday you also had to eat dinner. So it was like... And you have a fridge. So in Gan Eden, after the chet, now you have to work. So what the Midrash asks, wait, if he had to work to make his bread, so how was he going to get bread beforehand? I mean, he was going to eat bread even before the chet. So what? The bread tree. So the Midrash says that loaves of bread would grow up right out of the ground. And that's the bracha, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. What does it mean, hamotzi lechem min haaretz? Kochi v'atzim yodi.
About the chicken tree.
Right? I had to make the bread. It's true, a Kadosh Baruch Hu makes grain, makes the seeds, but I had to do a lot of the work myself. Originally, the original plan is that everything would grow up on its own. So, and everything would be there, and it would be there for man, it would be there for animals, it would be whatever you needed, like man, right? Like whatever you wanted, it was there. It tasted like whatever you wanted. It grew whatever you wanted. And the same thing in Shemitah, Levehem Techal, Chaya, Asher, Baratzecha. Gan Eden, it says, Et kol yerek esev lo'ochla, M'shemitah tiye kol tfuata le'ochol. What's the Torah doing here? What's the echo in Parshat Bahar that we hear? It's a return to an ideal. It's a return to a Gan Eden. And it's a return to a Gan Eden. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very present and very felt and seen and sensed and heard. And our needs are taken care of, even though never underestimate man's ability to ruin things. Never underestimate man's ability to mess things up. Halacha Lamaisa. Let's turn out the Halacha Lamaisa. Today's Rosh Chodesh Elul. Rosh Hashanah is in a month. Shemitah really begins in 1 month. But there is an idea of Tosefet Shvi'it. Just like we have Tosefet Shabbat. Right? There's a mitzvah to add on a little bit to Shabbat. Not just because of this idea that you're never exactly sure. I mean, now you know you want to know exactly what time Shkia is at exactly this point in the GPS. Right? This little device will tell us. If you assume that this little device knows the right shita on how to calculate, because it's a machlokus, right? When is shkia? Is shkia when the sun disappears behind Neve Daniel? Well, that looks like sunset, right? But that doesn't correspond to what it says on our calendars. You know, you walk up here to shul on Friday afternoon. By the time we start davening mincha, the sun is usually already gone. The sun? How could it be? With davening mincha after sunset, it's already Shabbos. No. Because we don't paskin that way, even though there is such a shita, right? We imagine like if the world were like a perfect sphere, which it is not, because we are at the top of a hill, and across from us, directly to the west, there's another hill, and in between there's a valley, exactly the way, this is exactly the description that the Gemara in Shabbos imagines, right? So the sun sets for us before it would set if there was no mountain. And if we were down there in the Vadi, it would set even earlier still. Because you'd be at a deeper, not elevation.
Decline.
What? Lower elevation. You'd be at a lower elevation. So Tosefet Shabbat is not just because we're not exactly sure, we're like all a little anxious, like you're afraid, right? But this idea of being mosif miha chol el hakodesh, right? You want to add kedusha. Min haTorah, the idea appears where? What's the home address for Tosefet?
Yom Kippur.
Because Torah says mi'erev ad erev. Right, so the Gemara learns out that even in the Torah itself, that Yom Kippur is more than 24 hours. Right, it starts on the day before and it goes until a drop of the day after. You know, you want two like even ends on either side. You know, just like your tablecloth has to be. You know, if you have a table that's 2 meters long, you can't have a 2 meter tablecloth because you need a little bit to cover on the sides. So the same thing with Shvius. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tet, you have it here, asks about Tosefet Chol Al Kodesh Minalan. What's the source for this? So the Gemara says, "Tanya b'charish v'katzir tishbut." Rabbi Akiva Omer, "Eino tzarech lomar charish v'katzir shel shviit, sharei kvar ne'amar sadecha lo tizra." When the Torah says, "Don't plow and don't reap," plowing is putting the plowing is you know, you dig up turning over the earth so that it'll be ready to accept the seed, and katsir is chopping down the wheat or whatever. So what does it need to tell me there that you shouldn't do this? The Torah already said about Shemitah, it already said in Parshat Bahar, don't do any of these malachot. So what do we need to specify? Don't plow. Ella charish shel erev shviit hanichnas l'shviit. So Rabbi Akiva says, no, that must be a different iser of plowing, not the plow. If you plow on Shemitah, that's one of the malachot on Shemitah that's forbidden. I'm sorry, just to go back a half a step, the parallels between Shabbat, you know, the every 7 day, and Shemitah or Shviit, every 7 years, should be obvious. I mean, I don't want to state the obvious, but it should be obvious. And the more you think about it, the more parallels there are. 7 days, 7 years. Shabbat Haaretz. Shabbat of Shabbat. The whole idea of melacha. Right? The whole idea of melacha, that the categories of things that are forbidden have the same kind of purposeful nature. Right, these are all, you know, some of the many parallels between the two. So obviously, we're talking about the malachot that you can't do on Erev Shemitah, because there is an idea of Tosefet Shemitah, Tosefet Shviit, that certain malachot done at the end of the sixth year, if done in preparation for Shemitah, because again, everything takes preparation. You want to have chicken soup tonight, you have to start working a couple days ago. Right? You want to have wheat on, I don't know, whenever the wheat... I must confess, there's... Yeah, I mean, I must confess that, like, you know, I don't really know any of this. I mean, you know, like, I'm making this all up. I mean, I'll say, like, if you want to have wheat on Hanukkah, so, but that's not actually when the wheat grows.
But
don't... Yeah, but the Korban HaOmer isn't on Hanukkah. Right, so like all that agricultural stuff, I'm a little in the shallow end of the pool. So I'll just make it up and I'll sound like very, like I know what I'm talking about. And you'll, but I won't say anything I don't really know if there's like a real nafka mina, or at least I'll try not to. But you want to have wheat, so you have to start plowing. Right, now those farmers, they really, what's that book? There's another interesting book. Professor Elisheva Karlibach from Brooklyn College. I think she teaches at YU now. She's a professor of Jewish history. She wrote this very interesting book last year, the year before, about Jewish conceptions of time and calendars. And, you know, like we all know, like we all have like a luach, even though like a luach is like an outdated thing because we all have the phone. But still people buy a luach, you buy a calendar with the zmanim, it's there on the refrigerator, everyone wants to know what time Shabbos comes in, etc. So she wrote a book about, like, you know, these early Jewish calendars and time. But it was, in most cases, like almanacs, like farmers' almanacs. They were all there so the farmers would know when to plant and when to, you know, like, you had to like, really be on your game, right? Because if you missed a deadline, if you didn't get that seed in the ground by such and such a date, the first frost was going to come, and then you were going to be stuck. So, so the same thing here. That if you're going to want to do certain things on Shemitah, so you have to start plowing the land on Erev Shemitah. So if you're doing Malacha on Erev Shemitah for the purpose of what of things that you're not allowed to do on Shemitah, so presumably that's Usser and that's the Tosefet, that's Usser. There's a machlokas here. Rabbi Yishmael disagrees. Rabbi Yishmael doesn't accept this limud of Rabbi Akiva, even though he himself, Rabbi Yishmael, does agree that there is such a concept as of Tosefet Shemitah. He just thinks that it's a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. But either way, there's this idea of Tosefet Shemitah. Now, according to most opinions, Tosefet Shemitah does not really apply Bizman Hazeh. The Tosefet Shemitah is a din that only applies Bizman Shebeit HaMikdash Haya Kayam, Bizman that Shemitah was Diraisa. But nevertheless, there are certain halachot that we still can't do. Now, none of us are plowing. My assumption that all of us are just, you know, kind of like regular home people. None of us have
a plow.
What?
None of us have a plow.
None of us have a plow. I mean, you know, some people might plant things in their gina, but none of us.
If you have a garden, you grow tomatoes, you grow peppers, you grow whatever.
Yeah.
You don't have to hold the ground.
Yeah, but that's not the choresh. Akiva used to. Akiva Savetsky used to. I don't know if he still does. You know, in his backyard, he used to.
What?
He used to like grow corn and stuff in his backyard. Like all these guys here on Yonatan HaChashmei before people got around to making their backyards nice, and it was just all weeds and whatnot. So he used to have like a farm out there. He used to grow things, pumpkin, who knows what. But there's a three-way machlokas. There's a three-way machlokas in the Rishonim about how Tosefet Shemitah applies nowadays, and actually for certain things from Tu B'Av, and for certain things from today, and for certain things in 2 weeks from now. One opinion is that there is no more Tosefet Shvi'it, because today Shemitah is Dirabanan, so there is no Tosefet Shvi'itah. Shemitah, and therefore you could plant whatever you want to plant. So presumably, if somebody's going to plant, we're talking about planting
winter squash.
Trees, winter squash. Oh, you're like an organic kind of guy, right? You're a vegan. What are you?
No, just
what?
Always had a garden. Just love growing things.
Yeah, but you don't eat like wheat.
Oh yeah, that too.
Oh yeah, that too. So the other opinion of Rabbeinu Tam is that it would be usser to plant in a way that the plants are not collate, meaning the roots don't take hold
before Shemitah,
so that you have to do it a certain amount of time in advance. For most things, that would be 2 weeks in advance. So you still have 2 weeks if you want to plant something. According to the Rambam, here you have it here on the daf. According to the Rambam, Tosefet Shemitah does not apply today. However, there are still some things that we're not allowed to do. He says, V'chol advar me'elu, that he listed the previous halacha, all the malachot, b'zman shebeit ha'mikdash, ha'elu b'zman ha'mikdash, kemo she'amarnu, ava b'zman hazeh mutarin ba'avodat ha'aretz ad Rosh Hashanah. So b'zman hazeh, you're allowed to do all the work, asterisk, except for the things we're about to say, until Rosh Hashanah. Af bizman hamikdash mutar lesakel lezabel asadot leader amashkaot, to fertilize the land and to pick out the rocks and to, you know, that's like a pro, like here especially, right? You know, like like most of our ginot are artificial. I mean, in our neighborhood, most of our ginot are artificial. I mean, the mitzvah toy baritz apply there, but here on Yudah Maccabee, you guys up on Zeit Shemin. How do you have a kina? We live on a rock, right? We live on a big rock, right? So what do they do? Your gina, for example, it's poreach ba'avir, right? They built this retaining wall. That's why you have all of those annoying steps up to your house. And there's this retaining wall, which is like a big sandbox, but instead of filling it with sand, they filled it with...
Dirt.
No, they filled it with cement, right?
And then
they added a small layer of dirt.
And rocks.
Right? Which is why we have the same thing down here. We planted, we lost two trees. Two lovely trees we planted, and the first year, remember I told you how nice it was to have a gina and to work the land, and essentially we had this tree in the garden, and told me, this tree, it takes... Ben Ami, you know, he says you have to water just like with these, you know, with like the tipim. So every night I would go out there and give it, you know, the tipim, and you know, for 15 minutes. And the first, you know, and it grew very nicely. And the second winter we were here, there was a big storm, and the whole thing just ripped right out of the ground. Why? And when it ripped out, you saw there wasn't enough soil, right? The roots spread out horizontally instead of going down vertically, and it couldn't get a hold on anything. And we tried planting something else on that side of the gina, nothing. On the other, on the further side, it must be a little deeper, because those trees managed to last. So you have to pick out all the rocks. Agnon's daughter, in her biography, she describes they moved to Talpiot in the 30s. So she said when they got there, this is a picture, you know, of the Beit Agnon. If you've ever been to the Beit Agnon. And now it's surrounded by all of these, you know, the American consulate and the apartment buildings. When Agnon moved there to that house, which is the Beit Agnon, which he moved into in 1931, there was nothing. Like you could see, he describes he could see from his house to Har HaBayit, and looking east, you could see all the way down to Yam HaMelech. Right? And there are pictures, you see, it was all open fields around. So his daughter writes in her autobiography that her mother would give her and her brother. Every day they'd come up from school, they'd get a little tin pail, not for the ice bucket challenge, and they'd have to go out to the gina and fill it with rocks. And if they filled the whole bucket with rocks, so then they'd get a bishlik, which was like a, I don't know, like a half a penny or something, I don't know, whatever that coin was. So that's that work of lissalek, to take out all, because that's a hachana. Right. In order to plant something, you have to first take all the rocks out of the soil. So the Rambam says you can do all these things until Rosh Hashanah. Vosin lehem batim mashkim otam v'sakinet ha'pa, etc. All these things that, you know, it's not necessary that we understand what each and every one of them is. Kol avot elu mutarot be'erev shviyat ad Rosh Hashanah shel shviyat v'afilu bizman ha'mikdash. V'af bizman hazeh, however, even bizman hazeh, ein notin ilanot. V'ein markivin, v'ein mavrichin, erev shviit elakadesh tiklot hanitiyah. But planting trees, that's the problem. If you want to plant a tree right now, depending on what kind of tree it is, you have a problem. These three, nitiyah, havracha, and harkava. Harkava is grafting one tree onto another, which is for halachic purposes similar to planting a tree. Havracha is something they do with certain types of trees and with grapes, where they take the vine and they put its head back into the soil, right? And then it goes down and then it sends out shoots and then new grape vines come up, which is also tantamount to planting. So planting trees, that's the problem, because if you plant the trees, you won't have enough time. The trees won't have enough time to take. So that's specifically if you're talking about, that's talking about fruit trees. If you're talking about non-fruit trees, I'd say srak. So that's a machlokas. According to the Chazon Ish, in an interesting case, the Chazon Ish here is Mako. The Chazon Ish says you're allowed to plant non-fruit trees up until Rosh Hashanah, but according to Rav Kook and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and others, you have until Tet Vav Be'el. So if you wanted to plant a non-fruit tree now, is there anybody that wants to do that? Okay, but if you did, you have 2 weeks to do it according to the Dat HaMekilim. according to the data machmirim, and according to the Chazon Ish, you have until Rosh Hashanah. But halach la'maisi, you should be machmir and not plant after Ted Vav. What about vegetables? You want to plant your tomatoes. You want to plant your other things. So that has to be, you have until Kaf Vav Be'elul. I don't know what the English date of that is. Because you need those, whatever it is, 5 days for the seeds to germinate. Is that the right word? Is it? So whatever it is, right? Otherwise, they would be considered svichen. Now, svichen is a topic we're going to have to discuss. Svichen, we happen to have some growing in our gina right now. What happened? We have the compost. You have the compost? You should compost. It's good for the earth. It's good for you. Who knows? If you want slugs, you get a lot of slugs. It doesn't smell bad. You can't put in any, you don't put in like meat and stuff. You just put in vegetables, the grass cuttings, things like that. So you throw into your compost, a piece of tomato.
Steve only has meat.
you throw into the compost, a half a piece of tomato. And then at the bottom of the compost drawer, you take out the good compost and you use it to fertilize your grass. So we have a big tomato plant growing with tomatoes on it from a seed that went through the compost into the fertilizer, into the grass, and it grew up like, kind of in the middle of the gina. So my wife made like this little fence around it so that, it doesn't get mowed over with a lawnmower and the kids don't knock it up and whatever. That's svichen. Now it's a motive for us to eat it because it's not Shemitah. But if that were to happen next year, it's svichen. Svichen in English is sometimes called the aftergrowths. But it means the things that kind of grow up on their own. So Chazal were worried, maybe it's a machlokus, whether svichen is also derabbanan or deraisa. Today, of course, everything's derabbanan. Chazal were worried that people would plant things while no one was looking during Shemitah and say, I didn't plant it, it just, it happens, tomatoes do just pop up. So in order to close that loophole, or that, not a loophole, that fake loophole, anything that grows up on its own, now that wouldn't be true for a fruit tree. Why? Because it doesn't just pop up, it takes a couple years. Right, even with, right, but with tomatoes, cucumbers, who knows what? So anything that just pops up on its own, if you have a vegetable garden, right? If you have a vegetable garden, even if you don't replant things every year, there'll be a few seeds left of things that fell, and it'll pop up again the next year. It won't be as nice. It won't be as good. It won't be as but they'll be there. So that's the issur of svichen. So to get around the issur, if you do plant vegetables, right? If you do plant tomatoes, whatnot. Parentheses, we still have to address the question of planting things in pots and what kind of pots and does Shemitah apply to them. But if you plant them actually in your garden, so you have until Kaf Vav Elul to do that, so that otherwise anything that would come up would be considered svichen. We just have a couple minutes left, so just some other practical things. It's just Chachamena Barosho. It's worthwhile now to give your grass, people who have grass, which, we shouldn't have. Like all the gardeners and the naturalists will say, the idea of the lawn, which we are all have some kind of been influenced by like American or British models of what a proper home and garden are, it's completely unnatural. It's unnatural in America and Britain, and it's unnatural 10 times over in this part of the world. He also writes about that. Pollan also has a book about gardening, where he talks about this mishigas of having lawns and what it meant in America to have a lawn and to garden and to mow your lawn and to have this postage stamp of green grass in front of your house, and like what it meant about the suburban dream and things like that. But since we all have lawns, or at least many of us have lawns, except for that guy who put in the plastic, so you should fertilize your lawn and give it good watering, because there are limits to how much you can water the lawn in Shemitah. We'll talk about the exact amounts. But there's fertilizing you do. If you go to the Mishtalot, you get this long-lasting fertilizer that you sprinkle around. You know, it's not like a it's not like mud. It's not like that kind of fertilizer. It's, you know what I mean. It's those little seeds, those, that powder, whatever it is. So there is long-lasting fertilizer that you can put down now that that will, you know, try to hold things over for the. For the year. Flowers also. If you want to plant flowers, if you want to plant a geranium, who knows what? Planting grass also has to be in before Kafav, right? If you put
not earlier, like
if you're planting seeds. No, before Kafav. It's not a tree, right? Flowers. Any flowers you want to plant in the Ginah. Everything should be done by then, and that's it. Next week we will turn our attention back to things related to the kitchen, and then we'll come back to the Gina a little bit later.